Hey everybody, welcome to the PC Perspective Podcast. This is episode 263, being recorded on August the 7th, 2013. I'm Ryan Schrout.
I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
I'm Josh Walrath.
And I'm Alan Malentano.
And it is the week after QuakeCon. We are all back and recovered. Some of us had to drive quite a bit, others not so much.
Some of us had to fly.
Some of us had to fly
inexpensive airlines.
In inexpensive airlines.
And some of us lied on the couch.
$1.99 for a drink on those damn things anymore.
Really?
Yeah, no more complimentary except water. They got to serve you water.
That's like the low-cost airlines. Yeah, they're legally required to serve you water, I guess.
Yeah, just saying, right? In a bowl.
It's not that they want to. Yeah, it could be like one giant bowl they pass around. Are you thirsty? Pass it on down when you're done. Go ahead.
Wipe the rim.
So last week was QuakeCon. We had our PC Perspective Hardware Workshop there on Saturday. We did a live podcast last week, which I guess
we actually had Hardware Workshop things to actually talk about this time instead of just 3 hours of passing out presents.
Wait, we got things to talk about?
Yeah, we talked about things, you know, stuff.
Oh, during the workshop, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I thought you meant now about it, because I don't really want to talk about it anymore. So we actually did a live podcast. That was kind of fun, right, guys?
Yeah.
Jeremy,
yeah,
you liked it. People brought us beer.
I had my beer woman, a.k.a. Matt.
I was impressed that they actually came and delivered that beer. I would have thought they just disappeared on you and maybe would show up after.
I expected it as well. They were stand-up gentlemen, and they actually brought us beer again at the beginning of the workshop. But I did not drink that on stage. They brought a 12-pack of that, and we drank it all later that
evening.
But
we did sign a nice book of theirs.
We did sign their yearbook. It was pleasant. It was sexually explicit, but nonetheless, it has all of our signatures on it now. So
when I ran for president,
and did Maury get to keep that giant tome they gave him?
The what?
That book that was about yay thin.
Oh, the Skyrim thing.
With?
Absolutely, yeah.
They gave him a second one.
They must have had a bunch of extra because they were just handing them out. Apparently, yeah.
It was like a ball and chain. They'd give it to people, and then these people would be like. You'd see them sort of slouched to the side holding it.
I got to hold this damn book again.
Oh, man, I got to go through another 200 hours of this game to find them all.
The workshop was fun. We had a good time there. We gave away a lot of stuff. I totally screwed up and forgot to raffle off. I had two raffle tickets for the cars and forgot to raffle those off, so I actually put them back in and gave them away to gamers at the finals party on Saturday night, so that was my bad. We gave away a lot of stuff. If you missed the workshop and you want to watch a video, which is essentially me calling ticket numbers and people excitedly coming to the front, you can do that. If you go to pcpro.com/workshop, you can see a summary of everything there. But there was a cool demonstration from Jacob at EVGA, and then Tom and Jason from NVIDIA came up on stage and talked.
I tell you, that 4-minute video by Tom is well worth watching. It explains exactly what FCAD does.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he presented that in a way that was just really easy to understand and nice moving graphics. And
I don't think
he's published
it.
Voice lulling us all to sleep.
I don't think they've published that online anytime. So maybe tomorrow, Ken, what we do is if we just take all the parts where he's talking out, I can just dub the audio, right, and just take the script. And anytime he says FCAT, replace frame rating, and I can do the exact same video. And they haven't published it yet, so as far as I know, it's not copyright infringement, right?
It'll just be Ryan's face superimposed over.
No. We'll set it up so it's like this backdrop, right? And I'll be talking, and we'll just cut all the audio out. And any place where they use clips, we can still use those clips. I'll just talk over everything. I think this is a good plan all of a sudden. He owes me. It's fine. So thank you to all of our sponsors who helped us, NVIDIA, Corsair, and Western Digital, who helped sponsor all the T-shirts we gave away. They also all sponsored prizes. But we had, like I said, tons of people here, ADATA, AMD, Cooler Master, Corsair, NMX, EVGA, Galaxy, Gigabyte, G-Scale, Intel, Inwin, Kingston, MSI, NVIDIA, PNY, not the same company, but They were together. NZXT, OCZ, Patriot, Fantech, Rosewill, Seasonic, Silverstone, Thermaltake, Western Digital, the QuakeCon group, and T-shirts. And I would like to thank everybody who attended on our team for spending the time there and helping out, move stuff around for me, tear down boxes, throw out things into the crowd. Did anybody get hit in the head really hard with anything this year?
Tom nailed somebody with a mouse pad.
Tom hit somebody really hard with a mouse pad, apparently.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Do you know those little plastic blow-up things that they packaged like this?
Yeah, yeah.
And you can make noise with it?
Yep.
I threw one out into the crowd, and I just see it heading towards a guy who is just talking to his friend like this. nails him. I ran as fast as I could back up to the stage.
Good idea. It's always best to hide. They can't get you if you're on stage.
Until you admit it. I nailed
somebody with one of those acrylic keychains from Galaxy.
Say again, Alan.
I nailed someone with one of those Galaxy acrylic keychains with the GPU in them.
Yeah, see, you got to stop doing that.
Did they take their eye out?
Why are they not looking? These people are...
They're looking at other places. Like, Maury was continuously out in the crowd trying to get people's attention to give out shirts when I had to yell at him through the megaphone speaker. Hey, Maury, I'm trying to give away stuff up here. We had a blast. It was a good time. We got done on time, which was a big plus. And again, thanks to everybody that helped out and all the sponsors and that kind of stuff. So hopefully we'll do that next year. There's a chance we might be able to do some of this other kind of stuff or this similar type of stuff at other locations, other events, other venues. So keep an eye out for that if Dallas isn't kind of your neck of the woods and QuakeCon may not be your thing. So
is it hot enough for you down there?
It was 103 or 104 every day.
Every day.
We were there for like ever during the day too. Forever, but we had a lot of fun.
It was good. -15 in the Anatole,
which is good. Well, in certain areas, like when you walk out of the BYOC, it must be the same air conditioning controls as the BYOC, like that little kind of atrium, or not the atrium area, but little walkway where people were lined up. That was freezing. That was uncomfortably cold. I also do want to point out that the QuakeCon guys did a great job. They got us our spot. They got us the time amount that we wanted. They did a good job setting up and organizing, and they got us on the stream and all that kind of stuff. They did a good job. I was impressed. I know we had some issues at the beginning trying to make sure we had the right time and the right day and all that, but they worked it out and they helped us. And they realized how big of a support we had for our workshop. I think it was the second most attended event at QuakeCon this year behind Master Pancake. I think that's right. So they understand how much people like getting free stuff. Weird. Go figure. So let's talk about hardware things, I guess. I kind of talked about this a little bit last podcast, but I wasn't supposed to talk about it yet. The Catalyst 13.8 driver that partially addresses the frame pacing issues that Crossfire has on AMD setups. So on our frame rating evaluation systems where we are capturing it and we're looking at performance not through fraps. Obviously, everybody that's listened to this podcast understands that we were able to find new problems with AMD Crossfire configurations that had runt frames that were not adding to the
experience.
Thank you. The experience of actually gaming. And so in many cases, I said that adding a second AMD GPU was actually not something that I would do. It seemed like you were kind of wasting your money buying a Crossfire configuration. They obviously didn't like that. They didn't like that a lot, actually. But so Catalyst 13.8 is a driver that they had promised us when the 7990 originally launched. And there's actually, we did a pretty good, concise video. Maybe not as good as Tom's, according to Josh. But a pretty good video nonetheless that goes over, obviously Tom's video wasn't going to talk about the improvements in Catalyst 13.8.
No.
But what we have done now is we are able to, we get a much better experience out of Crossfire in certain configurations. Now here's what they've added actually. In the control center, the Catalyst control center, there's actually a new option called frame pacing. And it's really just like that simple. It's underneath the 3D application settings under the Crossfire X subheading where frame pacing is either on or off. And when you have it enabled, which it happens to be by default, you get drastically improved performance with Crossfire configuration. So our main test bed for this was actually the Radeon 7990 because it's a dual GPU permanent Crossfire card. And what you get here is, let's see, let's go down to this graph. Here's Battlefield 3 at 1920 by 1080. And this is frame times, so the lower the better. But what you don't want is the orange back and forth swing. So what you have here is, you know, these really, really, really impossibly low numbers are those runt frames that only exist on the screen for fractions of scan lines. And then up here is where you have, you know, the longer frame. And so the downfall to that is as you were getting unsmooth animations and you were getting much lower performance than you would expect. That's the orange line. That's Catalyst 13.4. That's the older driver. The new driver is the black line. And it's actually kind of hard to see in some places, which is good news because that means it's able to be hidden behind other colors, which means it's thinner, which means the frame times are more consistent, which means you're going to have a better overall gaming experience. Now, let me look at the 2560 by 1440 result here, and you can see
now,
that.
Now, before you go on, yeah. Let me ask you one question.
Go for it.
Did you really just say unsmooth? That plank, you need to sand it down because it's unsmooth.
I guess it's unsmooth, so it's it's rough.
Rough.
But it's keyword not. It's not. Good. But it's not rough. It's just not smooth. It's herky and jerky. Rough. Rough is not the right adjective to use.
Unsmooth. Sorry.
This is a non. How about non? Can we go non-smooth?
Can we go non-smooth?
Course. This is a course experience.
In terms of ISUs, it is definitely non-smooth.
So 2560 by 1440, you can see the same, this graph here, the same experience change. Obviously going from the orange of the 13.4 driver to the black of the 13.8 driver. Hey, Ken, change to the other thing. Thanks.
and that was really unsmooth of you, man.
Unsmooth, Ken. Unsmooth. So also pay attention to the blue and the green line here. The blue line is the GTX 690. The green line is the GTX Titan. The Titan is higher up on the graph, indicating lower frame rates, but notice how thin the line is, indicating very smooth performance, very consistent frame times. The blue line is less smooth, less consistent, but still pretty good. And the black line now from AMD with 13.8 is actually pretty impressive. And what actually is kind of more interesting about what kind of happens because of it is if you look at this is our frames per second by percentile. If you look at the 50th percentile, it's kind of close to your average frame rate. Not exactly, but it's pretty close. And the orange line is what the average frame rate was before. When we took away all those runt frames, when we said we're gonna those frames that don't actually add to your experience, we're gonna remove those from the equation, and this was your frame rate, was under 60 frames per second. Titan was under 80, 690 was under 100, but now with Catalyst 13.8, it actually beats the two NVIDIA cards. It jumps up more than double, essentially, almost I think pretty close to double, essentially. Because we're doubling the number of frames that actually count towards performance. And so as a result, you're talking about 105 frames per second average as opposed to 59 frames per second average. And that was actually that happened for us. We saw improvements at 1920 by 1080 and 2560 by 1440 in Battlefield 3, Crysis 3, Dirt 3, Far Cry 3, and Sleeping Dogs. We did not see performance improvements in Skyrim. If you look here at our Skyrim results, if I score on 2560, you'll notice that the black line and the orange line still have these sections of unsmooth performance, or I'm going to keep using that term now.
Why not?
Inconsistent frame times. And that is because this driver doesn't support DX9. This is DX10 and 11 only. It's single display only, which means that if I swap over here to our three-way Crossfire Eyefinity and 4K results, you'll notice that there are no Eyefinity testing results that show improvements, and that's because it doesn't fix Eyefinity. It does not fix multi-display configurations. It only fixes single-display configurations, and without getting into too much detail, the 4K Asus PQ321, even though it's a single display, acts as multi-display, it uses multiple streams, it is not fixed either. So that's bad, and we don't really know when they're going to fix it. So that's kind of like the main drawback right now is that, yes, if you're running on a 25 by 14, say one of those Korean 27-inch monitors, 7990 with this new driver is a much, much, much improved card over what it was before. It, you know, it's not going to be great for DX9 games. AMD's kind of thinking there is most DX9 games aren't really GPU stressful right now. I'm not sure I 100% believe at that claim. In fact, I know I'm not 100% in with that, but it kind of makes sense. If you had to pick one or the other, DX10 or 11 or DX9 to fix first, I would pick DX10 and 11 for sure. Now, this is what they're calling phase one of the driver, this release. And now they have mentioned the term phase two to us. And reading around some of the other articles as well, there's apparently a thought that phase two will happen at the end of August. But I have talked with AMD several times this week specifically about that, and that is not going to happen. They do not have a timeline for release. It is not going to be the end of August if it does happen. And I begin to question if they do not have a timeline for us. I begin to question if it will happen, you know, in any kind of foreseeable future, August, September, October, November, December 2013. So it's kind of it's the 13.8 driver is a drastic improvement, but it doesn't fix everything, and it's I don't really know how to surmise it really, other than to say, like, if you're on a single display, you're going to be happy with this card and the new driver. It's going to be great. But if you have multiple monitors or you want to go to iFinity, I am still not really comfortable telling you to purchase an HD 7990 because I do not believe that driver fix will come in any kind of
useful time frame.
Yeah,
this fall?
Useful time frame. Useful being the key word there. Now, it's so I'm curious to see what your guys' thoughts are on kind of how this changes it, because I absolutely did not ever recommend the 7990 before this, and now I kind of recommend the 7990, especially when we get to the price drop that we'll talk about in a second for this card.
Still feels like you're wasting the 7990 on a single monitor, though.
You think so?
Well, it's just more juice than a single monitor needs.
Well, okay.
Unless a 4K.
Roll that back. You've got one of those Cat Lead monitors that's 2560 by 1440. That still is troublesome for even high-end cards. Well, maybe not troublesome, but certainly.
Well, for example, Crysis 3 at 25 by 14 is running an average of about 50 frames per second with the new driver on the 7990, right? So there are still instances where that is useful. Like, you know, if I look at Skyrim at 25 by 14, we're talking it's close to 120 frames per second. That's a little bit of overkill. But if you look at something like Sleeping Dogs at 25 by 14, you're talking about just between 50 and 60 frames per second. So I still think that there are use cases for it. Battlefield 3 is kind of surprisingly showing its age, right? It's over 100 frames per second now. Far Cry 3 is still probably a mess. It's a little bit less of a mess now with this driver. But you're talking about average of about 50 frames per second on that title as well. So there's still definitely use for that much power with that 25 by 14 or 25 by 16 display. So it's not like I think it's a complete, like, you cannot use it in any of these states. You know, if you're running a 1080p monitor, I would maybe recommend not spending that much money. But 25 by 14, I think, is okay.
Hey, you know, 10 years ago, this would not be an issue. Because
why?
There would be no EVCAT.
Right. And we would never have been able to quantify this problem or prove that it existed or prove how it affected performance.
Except I distinctly remember getting sent one of the GTX 7950 X2s.
It was just 7950, I think, but yeah.
7900 X2 or what, a GX2?
I think AMD used, or ATI used the X2 nomenclature. But
okay, I can't remember, right. Whatever. But yeah, it was the dual GPU GTX 7900 series. And I remember playing multiple games, and it's just like, this just doesn't feel real good, even though I'm getting good frame numbers. And then I upgraded to the GTX 8800 GTS.
Yeah.
That was the one with the 640 meg memory.
Gotcha.
And I just remember playing games at the same resolution, and it's like, wow, this is like butter.
Yep. So the issue is that this problem has been around for probably a really long time, and we've just never been able to fix it. So it's I guess I don't want to get too much of the politics of it again, but we've done that a lot. The NVIDIA has done a good job of fixing it before it was a problem, before people could say, hey, look at this, look at this. And it took AMD to be pushed to it. Now, when they were pushed to it, they seem to have responded relatively quickly, but they haven't gotten the full response out yet, right? They haven't fixed the entire problem. Whether or not that will actually happen with the 7000 series is, I think, still up in the air, whether or not it'll have to wait for the next generation of graphics cards, which, as leaks go around, will happen on September 25th. So, go figure. So any other thoughts on this driver or how they released it or what, you know, anything, I guess?
I'm happy that they released it because it shows that the architecture can be fixed to run as intended. But it certainly seems like it obviously is more of a software solution than what NVIDIA has done in their hardware for this generation, possibly last generation, a few other things in the generation before that were hardware based. And but I think the over the top connector is just not pushing the frames out when it transfers and copies over as fast as it should. So I'm wondering what kind of hardware things AMD has to implement to get better communication between the two graphics cards, because it simply obviously is not working real well.
Right. And maybe related news, AMD has dropped the price of the Radeon HD 7990 as of today. Earlier this morning, I actually found a bunch of them on Newegg for $699. That is a $300 price drop over its original launch price of $999.
8 games.
And you get 8 games with it. Now, Ken and I were having an argument discussion today on whether or not that has any value anymore, right? So you get Crysis 3, Bioshock Infinite, Tomb Raider, Far Cry 3, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, Hitman Absolution, Sleeping Dogs, and Deus Ex Human Revolution. Now, some of those games are fairly old.
And right. I have not bought any cards.
Right. So a lot of PC gamers are going to either have these games or don't care about these games. Ken was saying, hey, you know, the Steam summer sale just happened. Chances are a lot of these games were really cheap. So the dollar value that AMD associates with this bundle is maybe not as high as it once was. I'd say even if you say you're getting $100 or $150 worth of value out of these products, that's pretty good. Ken says you're not going to get that. I think these eight titles for $100, $150, I don't think that's way too much.
I think you can eBay them for $15 to $20 a piece. So, you know, it's $160 at max. No.
Yeah.
You couldn't sell Hitman. You couldn't sell Sleeping Dogs.
Somebody look up what these games cost on Steam today. Today. Except for Crysis, because you can't do that. Or maybe Far Cry 3. No, you can't do that one. I don't know. Also, I did find out as I clicked this link earlier this evening that they're no longer $699. They're already up to $729 on Newegg.
They had a run.
Yeah, so they're like, oh,
I can't imagine.
Crap, people are buying them now. Jack up the price. When I asked AMD about it, they said they actually only lowered the SEP, the suggested ETL pricing, to $799, and the rest of the cuts were coming out of their add-in card partners themselves. So you can still get them for $699 with after rebate. This XFX one here, showing up $699 after rebate with $6.14 shipping, and then Amazon has gotten this lower pricing already on there. So that's pretty interesting. Now with that in mind, what do you think about the $799.90?
It doesn't really change my opinion.
No.
Well, it's still a neat card, and I'm not entirely sure how they do all the cross communication. But it does have a little robust PCI Express bridge chip that does a few things in there.
I don't think the cross-hard performance is going to change any on that. I mean, the testing I did was on the 7990 earlier. I will say that the GTX 780 is $649. So for $50 more, now you can get the 7990. So that's kind of puts it into an interesting spot, right? And the GTX Titan and the GTX 690 are still $999. So it's a much more aggressive spot. I think they will sell quite a few of those at that price, to be honest. And I think that's perfectly fine as long as gamers know what they're getting into before they purchase it. And that's my problem, is I think before the 13.8 driver, people didn't know what they were getting into. They didn't really know, unless they had read our stories, that they didn't really know what the problems were going to be. So,
yeah, I think that's a good price for a high-end card in general. I think $1,000 is just a little insane. $900 is a little insane. $600, yeah. $699, I got to get some inheritance cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you'd still think about it.
Well, yeah.
You wouldn't even just toss it out the window as, no, I'm not paying that.
Yeah, well, I think about Kate Upton, too. And
well. Just,
yeah. I do often. Morey posted a review while we were quick on of the Cooler Master Half XB Landbox case. And I actually saw this being used a couple of times over at QuakeCon, and I remember I stopped and asked somebody what he thought about it. It's actually pretty cool. So it's a cube-shaped design, but it actually holds full-size ATX components.
It reminds me of an old phonograph.
That's because you're an old person.
Yes.
But you can see by looking at it, the actual components sit above right here in this mesh area. You get a full-size ATX motherboard in there, and all the components are going along with it. And then you've got your optical and storage bays down here, giant fan up top. Here you go. In the back, you can kind of see where the power supply goes, if you've got any radiators that you want to include. It's a much larger case than it might at first look based on the photos. It's officially called a mid-tower, but more a kind of questions that. It does support both a 240 and a 120 millimeter radiator in it, and graphics cards up to 13 inches long, which is nice. It's a pretty interesting case. There's a lot of mesh in it, so if you've got dust issues, I don't think there are any filters on most of the intakes, but it's really cool looking. It's really has a lot of capability for modding. I think some of the case mods, at least one of the case mods that I actually saw, was built along this as well. So it's a nice case. Let me go to the end here. I want to find out what the pricing was. $99 on Newegg, $92 on Amazon, $89 on Tiger Direct. Not a bad deal for what you get there. And it did get an Editor's Choice Award for Morey. He loved it. Sleek, flat black, power-coated surfaces inside and out, toolless hard drive bays, support for multiple water cooling radiators. He loves his water cooling. Available external port support. Inclusion of externally accessible hot swap drive bay fan filters. It does have fan filters. Internal spacing, layout, and design. Rubber grommets for case fans. Blah, blah, blah. And he even mentions case configuration and modding possibilities. So check out that case review on PCPro.com. It's Cooler Master Half XB LAN. That is HAF space XB space LAN space box space case space review. Space PCPro.com. Website.
You and your really descriptive.
I help. So, addresses. Josh, we're going to talk about John Carmack and his incredibly interesting keynote from QuakeCon, as we do every year.
Before we do that, the latest news.
John is not at ID, probably.
Well, anymore. He kind of is.
He's kind of not. We've been arguing this all day. He's kind of not there. And there's also, I see a misspelling of the word Oculus in this post, Jeremy. There's only one C in Oculus.
Sweet.
So Oculus VR, that goofy thing on his head that we have tested here.
He does
have the HD prototype. That son of a... Well, he can do that now because he's the CTO of Oculus VR, leaving his position as technical director at ID Software. That's right. John Carmack is now no longer full-time developing game engines or building rockets, and my life is over. Everything I thought I knew was right in the world is gone.
You know, I think he's been a little
bit... Well, no, he's still living a better life than you are, Ryan.
Well, that wasn't the point, but okay.
You got to think of a guy like that. He gets bored rather easily. That's why he works on lots of little side projects. And he had Armadillo, and Armadillo didn't pan out very well. In fact, it's kind of mothballed, and not a whole lot's going on there. And ID has perhaps been a little marginalized by Bethesda. And certainly they haven't been the most productive design studio in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, Rage was out how many years ago?
And it was not that great.
Yeah, and we haven't heard anything about Doom 4. Their CEO left under strange terms. We don't really know all about that. And now, yeah, John Carmack is moving on to other things. And certainly...
It's very sad.
It is, and it is a change. But, you know, he started working on some VR stuff by himself, pretty hardcore, before he knew about the Oculus people.
Right.
And once they, you know, kind of broke cover and said, hey, we've got this product, and he got it in, and he's like, oh, yeah, this is light years away from what I had done. I mean, they had fixed all kinds of problems, and I really like their thinking. And the year before when he gave a keynote, he talked extensively about the VR stuff, which is kind of interesting because he didn't talk about it as extensively this year, but he did make some really important points and about how important he thinks it's going to be coming up.
Right.
Maybe not right now, maybe not in 2 years, but it's going to be huge coming along. And to tell you the truth, you know, to kind of segue into that, what's the name of that running thing that you wear the Oculus and you run and then you projectile
vomit? Rift.
What?
The Rift? Is that what that's called?
I thought the whole Oculus thing was the Oculus Rift.
Oh, yeah, the Omni. Omni is what it's called.
The Omni.
Yeah.
Do you know how much weight I'd lose?
From the bulimia
could,
or from
I
the running?
I could run a stinking marathon after playing through all of...
It looked like a lot of work.
Yeah.
You'd be you'd be rating games in hours of gameplay and calories burned.
Exactly. Nice. And I think that's awesome, except I'd need like an own special room for the damn thing, and my wife would be pissed.
Yeah.
But boy, I would be ripped.
Well,
whoa,
or you would quit playing video games.
Yeah. That too.
So tell us about what John had to say. Obviously, we don't have to go over every little bit and point, but what were a couple of the highlights?
Yeah, he talked for a good solid 2.5 hours, and then he did another hour worth of Q&A. And, you know, he jumped right into the whole next generation of console. And while he appreciated what the last generation brought, and he also commented extensively on, you know, how much software had evolved to really take advantage of the previous generation and the interesting things that they're able to do, a lot of the limitations of the previous generation are now really gone. You've got a better threading architecture. You've got gobs and gobs of memory on, even with the Xbox One, which has, you know, running a DDR3 memory, it's still got so much more bandwidth and 8 gigs of stinking memory to do kind of whatever you want with.
Right.
It's a whole new level of freedom. And he thinks even though that there are differences between the two architectures, you know, maybe not so much the base architectures, they both use AMD Radeon cores and using the GCN architecture and also the Jaguar-based CPU cores, the speeds, they're going to be different. Sony's got a little bit more robust hardware in terms of uses GDDR5. It's going to have faster, you know, memory there. But he says, you know, overall, they're very comparable and easier to develop for. Sony has really come to the fore with their development tools. That was one thing that has really stuck in a lot of developers' craws. PS2 was hard to develop for. Their software tools were, you know, not garbage, but they were highly technical things that guys like John Carmack would really enjoy using.
Right.
Because they like to dig into stuff, and you've got this fine-grained control, but the learning curve is just out of this world. PS3 was the same, and you also had the issues with the cell processor and its SPUs that you could only use like 2 or 3 of them at a time. Otherwise, you're actually slowing the whole operation down because it's just too much cache pressure, too much memory pressure, and it was just, again, very hard to develop. Coding tools were not easy to work with, but Sony has really stepped up their game in terms of development tools. They're at least on the level, if not a little above, where Microsoft is with the Xbox One and their development tools. So that's a positive thing, and we'll see a lot more interesting games come out a lot more quickly. He says it's a great thing for AMD because they're going to optimize now for the AMD architecture, both on the graphics side and on the CPU side. But I'm kind of wondering how well that's going to do because Kabini and Jaguar are very different in terms of architecture than what Bulldozer, Vishera, Trinity, and Piledriver are. So it's going to be interesting to see if any of that really can be ported over effectively onto the CPU side with the non-Jaguar based processors. Oh gosh, he went on and on. He doesn't really particularly care for Kinect right now.
Yeah.
He made called a great it a comment about that. Go ahead and tell it, Brian.
I will. I'm going to steal this from you. Yes. He called it. He said, I remember when Apple came out with a one-button mouse and everybody kind of complained about that. And in a lot of ways, Kinect is like a zero-button mouse with a lot of latency.
Yeah, that was a lot of people laughed
everybody
at that.
Chuckled.
And if you've ever played with Kinect, it's absolutely true. I mean, you're sitting there and you put your hand up like this, and you got this little ring that goes around on the screen that is like 2.5-3 seconds before it actually activates. And he said, you know, there's just not enough fine-grained control in these, you know, in Kinect and even Kinect 2, well, or whatever they're going to call the second generation of Kinect, that it doesn't have the optical clarity and programming and hardware processing to make small, you know, to discern small movements. Like, okay, you got your hand up here, you do your index finger once, it activates whatever you're on. So you go up here, bang, you're done. No, instead you got to sit here, wait, hold still, hold still. Your child bothers you, you look to the side, oh, you got to put it back, hold still, hold still. It's just, you know, there's a lot of work to do into things like that. He went on to talk about a little bit about DRM. He's not entirely anti-DRM, obviously. You know, he's been a game publisher. Mm-hmm. But he said that things that would make us mad 10 years ago are not nearly making us mad. I mean, 10 years ago, if they would have said, hey, you need to carry a GPS around with you all the time so we know where you are. I mean, we would have raged and rioted against the government control. And then 10 years later, we've got these things with built-in GPS that we carry in our back pocket and sit on, and we don't seem to raise much of a fuss about. Mm. And he says the DRM's kind of going to be that way. I mean, we have really good implementations like Steam, and we've got other implementations that are not so good. But eventually, it's all going to go to where it's a lot more transparent because we're more connected all the time, and it's not as big a deal because it doesn't impact us nearly as much as what some of the, you know, even some of the current DRM problems that we have are really annoying. Batman Arkham City, pain in the butt. You can only install it like 5 times. And then, you know, if you're a guy like me, you format computers and hard drives, and I don't ever do a, what do you call it, an image?
Like a deregister the game, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a pain in the butt. And then things like Steam, it just seems to work well, and nobody really complains about it anymore. Android versus iOS. He says that all things considered equal, they're really close together. iOS had a big lead for a long time, but Apple didn't do a whole lot with it, and Google was very, very aggressive, obviously. And so right now, he thinks that development for either is very comparable. In some ways, Android's easier because if you start coding in Java, you know, it's a very easy thing to do. Android still has, you know, kind of what he said, some of the goofy Linux garbage in the base coding and kernel that you have to deal with. But otherwise, you know, they're very equal, and Google and its partners have been very aggressive in really putting out a lot of good equipment. Anything else that, you know, I know you had read over and edited, anything really stick out? I guess the one thing is interesting is he talked about tiled renderers, and it kind of sent us back in time when 3D effects and Power VR were really going neck and neck, and 3D effects and immediate renderers really kind of won the day because of the issues with tiled renders at the time with compatibility, image quality, stuff like that. And right now, tiled has really kind of taken over the mobile world. because Imagination Technologies has licensed out there their tiled renderers to multiple partners, including Intel. And so he is not opposed to tiled renders. He thinks that they're perfectly fine. They're very bandwidth and memory conservative, so you don't need a whole lot to have a pretty decent experience. He just thought it was kind of interesting that they'd come as far as they had. Now, before I cut you off, were you going to say anything there?
No, go ahead.
Okay, displays. That's like a three-hour discussion.
Well, here's what we could do.
Okay.
Label off some of the topics that he talks about, and if we don't want to, you know, go on and on and on the podcast about it, but tell people to just go back and read what one of the smartest people I have ever talked to's thoughts are on a couple of key topics.
Yeah, I mean, displays are interesting because that's our window to the world, and to really get the best experience, you're going to need, you know, lower latency, you know, better colors and all that stuff. But, you know, he's really on 120 hertz kick. He wants to develop more games for that. He is amazed that people are still developing games aimed at 30 hertz. And he just thinks that overall it causes too many problems. And I think he seems kind of excited that things are coming down the pipeline, and things that really need to come down the pipeline, especially when you're talking about the VR headset stuff. We're going to have much, much better displays. And we're finally at the point, even after, you know, 10 years, he hasn't been extremely happy, because he was talking about one of his workstations back in the late 90s. It had two LCD monitors on it that were like 1280 by 1024 or 1024 by 760. I can't remember what. And he said he paid $10,000 for each one, just so he could have them on his desk rather than big CRTs. And now we've gotten to the point where you can get a good 1080p monitor that's 23, 24 inches for about $150. And so he is happy where the price is. He just wants a little bit more quality and, you know, the higher refresh and the ability to support, you know, the faster frame rates. And again, with the VR stuff, denser displays that have much lower latency than what we are seeing. As well as, you know, because when you wear one of those goggles, you kind of get a little bit of a, you know, a faint screen door effect. You've tried these before, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so he wants to get rid of those. In his little CEO, you know, CTO picture, obviously, he's wearing the high-definition version. I believe that it's 1080p per eye.
No, 1080p combined.
Oh, 1080p combined. Okay. But still, much better than what?
Yes, much better.
They have now. Yeah. So lots of stuff there. Again, take a look over. Input.
He touches on the input. Talks about not liking game controllers. Audio
not
pickup.
Not a big fan.
Purity audio, of code, which doesn't make
sense for him.
It's going to
be a lot more important coming up, especially with the VR stuff, because gaming audio has not done what it's promised to do. And he thinks that some big jumps need to go there. Oh boy, software. He talked about that for a good hour, and I'm not a programmer, and he's talking about Haskell, and what else? Lisp.
Lisp, yeah.
Yeah, My favorite. You know, compare and contrast programming languages, what he wanted to learn, what he expected out of it, how easy you are to do things, you know, how pure and clean you can keep your code with all these other branches to make stuff work. So, again,
check it out.
Lots to talk about. Lots to read.
It is, and it's only two pages. But as Josh says, it's a dense two pages. It's full of a lot of interesting information. Just look up, go to PCSpur.com, check out the John Carmack keynote, QuakeCon 2013 article. It is still up and around. So let's talk about a couple of other things that might be interesting. Like, how about this? IBM is going to open up its architecture, the power, what's its name? Just the power architecture, I guess? ARM style, to take on its competition. What do we think about this? There's actually a story over from the Register where he says, with its embedded power chip business under assault and having lost console gaming business to AMD, IBM is doing something to expand its addressable market for power processors. It's called the Open Power Consortium, which takes a few pages from the ARM Holdings playbook to breathe some new life in the power architecture. So is the idea here that they're licensed off the architecture for use in a lot of other designs, or is it where they're going to create a couple of specific designs and let people implement them where they see fit?
We don't know exactly for sure. What we can do is look back in the past. And the power architecture, I believe, was introduced around 19, well, to consumers, was really introduced around 1995. That's when Apple went from the Motorola 6800 series to the Power series. And that was kind of their heyday. They ran a lot of Apple. They were starting to develop a lot of processors for the server market as that was growing. And then kind of the icing on the cake was the Xbox 360 and the Sony PS3 both integrated power architecture into their CPUs for each of the consoles. And since then, it's been nothing but downhill. Intel has been dominating the server market. Apple dropped power. We just, other than, you know, some IBM, I think Watson was power-based
architecture. I saw that thing on Jeopardy once.
Yeah,
you did.
And you welcomed your new overlords.
I always do.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's kind of been downhill. And so I think they're looking is like saying, you know, we're not going to be able to develop for desktop. We're not going to be able to really chip away too much on the server. We can do some things. But you know what? What if we open this up to other guys who are willing to license and provide them with something that they can create and address a certain niche market with and eventually start building up our presence as a competitor to not just ARM but also x86 again. And to kind of get into a position where, hey, we're licensing this out. It's a good technology. It's a solid architecture. I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with it. It's more modern than x86 in how they're presenting it. So it's not a bad thing that they're doing this, and they're kind of...
I find it interesting that NVIDIA is part of this consortium as well.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we'll try anything.
Well, they kind of have
Yeah,
but I mean, it's NVIDIA, it's Mellanox for networking, and Tyann, which again hints back to servers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And NVIDIA has obviously worked with power before because they're the graphics processing unit and the in the PS3.
Right.
So there's some history there. They know how it works.
It'll be interesting.
It will be.
Just starting out. What about Panasonic launching new microcomputers with RE-RAM?
Resistive RAM.
So is it RE-RAM or RE-RAM?
No, when you say it, you're supposed to put your finger up like this and say, RE-RAM. RE-RAM. RE-RAM.
RE-RAM. Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not a huge thing, really. It's more like they're using it as a very small part of a microcomputer design. Just to do the storage, most likely because they wanted something non-volatile, but they wanted something that they could do very frequent and very small writes to, which regular flash memory is not good for because you have to erase a whole page at a time and there's wear leveling and all this other thing. Whereas RE-RAM or resistive RAM, you can do like single bit, rewrite single bits. You don't have to do like the CDR thing where you have to, or the CDRW thing where you have to like wipe out a whole chunk of it and then, rewrite the whole chunk again. So it's a very specific thing. I think it was only like a 64K worth of it on the chip because I believe it takes up a lot of space relative to flash memory. But it's nice to see that somebody is making it in something that is mass-produced somewhat and, an actual application as opposed to everything we'd seen up so far, which is just, most of that. This could be vaporware. This could be Jell-O-Ware. We don't know. It's just everyone's talking about it.
I'm sorry, did you say Jell-O-Ware? In the lab.
What?
Did you say Jell-O-Ware?
I don't know. Whatever you want to call it.
Oh, okay. I like
Jell-O. Well, this stuff makes me think Jell-O because it's the way it does its rewrite is it makes it semi-molten, depending on. Yeah, it's weird.
Nah, that makes me not want to eat Jell-O. Okay, what about this story, though, Alan? Samsung mass-producing vertical NAND with higher performance and reliability. It says it right in the title.
This, I hope, spreads really fast.
Like, never mind.
Like smallpox.
No. Okay, so it's going to be much harder to make this stuff, so it's not like they can just flip some switch at the fab and all of a sudden, poof, everyone has 3D NAND. No, it's not that easy.
Okay.
But it's probably using a lot of the same gear. It's, you know, it's being produced on wafers. This is all the same kind of tech, but they're able to actually stack up vertically now. So they can lay down their, you know, layer, and then they can stack up another layer and stack up another layer, which is cool, right? Because instead of having multiple dies within one package, which I think at present the only thing practical is like 8 to stack 8 high, they could take one die and stack up to, what was the number? 24, I believe. 24 layers. That's their theoretical.
Which is 42 backwards. Do you think that answers anything?
No.
Well, it obviously confirms that episode 3 is coming out soon.
Yes, must be. So the other advantage to this is that they're making the actual channels, the actual, like, where the bits are stored, is also being made 3D-ish as opposed to just flat planar 2D. So they're able to get some extra added benefits, like probably the longevity of it's going to be much, you know, it's going to last longer, basically. You don't have a flat, very small, very thin, isolated channel to store your charge. You can actually have, like, something that has some volume to it.
You know, I can't believe you said 3D-ish. Don't you know it's
still
3D?
Sort of.
It's 3D-esque.
Yeah, I guess. Whatever you want to call it.
Can you go? Can we go with non-2D?
I don't know. That sounds unsmooth.
It does.
But it is. It is still like a stack of relatively thin planes of flash memory. Anyway, yeah. It's this is very promising, but I don't see it like. You're not going to stick this in solid-state drives right off the bat because, because what they're making right now, they can make far cheaper and it's more cost-effective, that sort of thing. But like anything new, you know, it's if they start cranking out enough. The advantages I see is if you have devices that are limited to single chips, single packages. So, for example, smartphones or any kind of mobile device that has, you know, an SSD in it but is very limited on the number of chips it can have on the packaging, for example, because you can get a higher speed per package out of this technology, and you can get higher density, obviously. So that's where it's at right now. Like anything else, that's, you know, other solid-state devices in the past first appeared in mobile devices and then trickled out and got into the SSDs. So there's a potential, you know, year or two from now for this kind of stuff to start trickling into solid-state drives.
Sweet.
Yep.
Now, speaking of confirming Half-Life 3, Jeremy, apparently there was a story of a leaked screenshot from somebody at a Dota 2 tournament confirming Source 2 and Left 4 Dead 3. Not Half-Life 3, though.
Well, it's all just a code. It's actually it's revealing Halo, I believe.
Oh, okay, good.
No, it's going to be interesting that somebody, if you click on the Imgur, it's a much better picture. But you can actually sort of see somebody managed to catch this at a DoD tournament. And yeah, Source 2 is mentioned, and L4-D3, which sounds like an early model or astromech droid to me, is sort of possibly a thing. So it's sort of nice just to get a peek at this. And other than that, really, we know nothing else.
Isn't that enough, though?
Oh, no, no, a hint at a release year. I'm not going to ask Valve for a release date, a release year, maybe a release decade.
How much will it enrage the internet if Left 4 Dead 3 comes out before Half-Life 3?
We're going to find out, I think.
Yeah, I think we will.
So Half-Life 2 was 2004, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and think of how long it seemed in between Half-Life 1, which was 98...
Mm-hmm.
98, 99, and then 2004. It was only 5 years. And people were raging. Why is it taking so long?
I think at this point,
and then they went episodic.
9 years.
Should be Half-Life 3 forever.
9 years.
See, it's not actually sequels. They're exponential. That's why it's taking longer and longer each time
to
come out.
So it's going to take 25 years?
Yes.
Surprise, surprise. Valve is working on Source
2. That's, yeah, that'll be a surprise.
Yes, it is shocking, isn't it?
It is. It
hey,
is
well, look how poor quality
the second Star Wars trilogy
was when they really, you know, they waited a while and then they did it all very fast. So obviously, Gabe does not want this to happen to, you know, his baby.
Well, tough titties, I guess. It's going to come out. Our last little bit of news here. Qualcomm says they are not interested yet in building an 8-core processor.
Using the 4?
Well, yeah. I just love the term octa-core processor. I just want to use that more. MediaTek, their competitor, recently unveiled an 8-core ARM SoC, which can be fully utilized. Most other mobile SoCs with 8 cores function as a fast quad-core and a slower but more efficient quad-core processor, with the most appropriate chosen for the task. That's the big little kind of setup that is currently running with ARM. Chandrasekhar of Qualcomm believes it is desperation.
MediaTek's always desperation.
So,
a firm clarification
that Qualcomm will not launch an octa-core product. A firm but not clear response was given. We don't do dumb things. Of course, they would not commit to swearing off 8 cores for all eternity. At some point, they may find their core count to be the bottleneck. So it's interesting. Qualcomm does not seem to think that moving in that direction is worth investing in right now. It's kind of interesting, right? So if you look at the big little architecture, it's really not an 8-core processor. That's Samsung 8-core SoC that exists in the GS4 over in Europe. It's not really 8 cores. It's 4 cores high power or 4 cores low power, depending on the environment and the kind of the working environment that it's in. So the fact that MediaTek had actually unveiled an 8-core ARM system that can be fully utilized is kind of interesting. I will say that ARM has told me that their goal for Big Little is to have all 8 of those cores, or however many cores are actually implemented, fully accessible at all times. So it could be that MediaTek is just kind of the first to implement this kind of idea for ARM systems going forward. I don't 8 cores seems like a lot. It really does. I don't know. Maybe high end tablets. It depends, right? If you can get a large scale of high power, high performance, ultra low power, ultra low performance parts, you might be able to scale your workload pretty dynamically, but that whole transition process has to be very fast as well. And Intel's argument with Bay Trail and what's the name of the architecture, Silvermont, is that that's not necessary. They have their cores that will scale from low performance to high performance and low power to high power on demand. They don't need to go with this kind of what they claim is an inefficient big little ecosystem. So it's kind of interesting that Qualcomm says that it's we don't do dumb things, right? And Qualcomm is an ARM partner, but they don't use ARM cores. They use ARM architecture and develop their own cores. So it's kind of almost as if they may be on the side of more along what Intel is doing than what ARM and some of its other partners are pushing. Any thoughts on that, Josh?
It certainly seems to me that the big little is kind of a waste of transistor space. Die space, as well as added complexity in kind of the low BIOS code about, you know, where's utilization with these big cores? Okay, let's switch them over to the little, and then you've got, you know, some latency involved with, powering up those cores and then switching the workloads and cache flushes and everything to make them work. And I think that that's just too much work. I mean, I've got a dual-core cell phone, and I don't know of a workload that I do that really even stresses that. And we've got quad-core. And, in fact, I think, I'm not trying to be a fanboy or anything. I think NVIDIA has got actually the better overall architecture with their 4+1.
Mm-hmm.
They've got the low-level one core that does a lot of work when there's just very small amount of things going on, then it activates the quad cores when it needs to. And then it can utilize that fifth core for other things like, you know, touch sense. I've never been a big fan of of the Big Little. It just seems like it's an interesting idea, but the technical challenges for a handheld device, whether it be a cell phone or a tablet, it just makes it too complex for what it's used for, and especially for Android. Android is multi-thread aware, but it's not very multi-thread intelligent. Certainly, it can shuffle things around, but it's not as effective as a more robust, larger server-style OS or even the latest version of desktop Win 8, Win 7. I kind of agree. MediaTek's kind of overkill. Maybe they're just trying to make a name for themselves. It's a marketing ploy to get people interested. It's like, hey, I've got an octa-core handset that it doesn't need to go into low power states for four of the cores when the other four are working.
More cores
is much better. Just ask AMD and their FX processors.
But those aren't cores; those are modules.
They are modules.
Yes.
Anyway,
they're truly multiple.
So that's kind of like the big news and stuff for this week. Anything else that I left out that you guys want to talk about real quick, or should we get into our picks? Because mine's the best pick I've ever had.
Ever?
Ever. Did you know?
It's Debbie Gibson, isn't it?
Damn, that was close. Next week. So did you know that for a mere $59.99 shipped with free shipping, Amazon Prime, you can get This is 1,000 feet of RG6 cable, dual shielded.
What are you going to do with the RG6 cable?
He's going to run it beside that Ethernet cable he's got running from the old office.
So we're going to make BNC video cables out of this for the cameras in the studio. So it turns out you could buy 500 feet for $49. And I thought, that's stupid. Let's buy 1,000 feet that I'll never, ever need all of. Because it's $59.99, free two-day shipping. And this thing weighs a lot. This would cost a lot for shipping. They put it in a box, too. And then the packing material they used was
depleted uranium?
No, it was paper. It was like crumpled paper. Well, guess what's not going to keep this from moving around inside of a box? Crumpled paper. So the box was all destroyed when it got to me. It didn't really matter. It's just effing cable, right? But I was pretty impressed that you could buy 1,000 feet for $59. I think even mono price, 1,000 feet was like $160. And then what was the first place we looked at, Ken? It was 1,000 feet for like $280.
It's not all the same cable.
It's all pretty much close. It's close.
Did you try sourcing it at Monster Cable, though?
No.
That
comes with built-in antivirus and all sorts of things.
That's true. Antivirus cables are the best. Mm. Should have got that, Ken. Otherwise, our cameras are going to get viruses.
Yep. If you're going to get cable from Monster Cable with that length, you actually had a credit application with Lehman Brothers.
Yeah, so Knight Rider wants me to do me learning RG6 crimping to do a video on it. I did RG6 coax, creating coax cables at one point, and it was a pain in the butt. It's nowhere near as...
It's okay, they got a tool for crimping it now.
I know, they do. We had to order special, we had to get regular BNC cables, and we had to get some tiny ones too, so... Let's talk with who's next. Jeremy, what do you got?
Surprisingly enough, this actually was sourced from an antivirus vendor, but they are pointing out that there are approaching 1 million current malware apps available for Android for your downloading pleasure. So for crying out loud, would you maybe consider slapping a little bit of antivirus, anti-malware on your bloody phone so it doesn't infect all of your friends' phones and you share it around like some sort of cheap Taiwanese. Just about, if you like paying for Trend Micro or one of those, you can get that. If you like the free ones, like Avast, AVG, you can do that. It just, seriously, it's not like you can really choose to run it in safe mode.
Right.
So consider it.
All righty. Next on the list from Josh.
This is a classic piece of software. I remember from my youth, It's called Spank Your Monkey. Spank My Monkey. Spank The Monkey. And it's got...
anybody's monkey, really.
The grooviest, grooviest soundtrack. If only you could hear it. That's not it. That's Falco.
So not monkey.
Hold on. Let me switch back out of here.
Don't let Ryan play it because he fondles the monkey. He doesn't slap it.
Oh, I'm gonna fondle this monkey. How about now? Is that the right music?
That's better.
No, I don't. Hey, monkey. Hey, what's going on, monkey?
Slap that monkey.
No, I'm just caressing the monkey.
Spank.
No, this is foreplay, Josh. Monkey.
Oh, you spanked the monkey at 57 miles per hour.
You could do better.
Oh. Weak sauce.
Duh. This little laptop mouse is not the same. Oh, 148.
What happens if you zoom the window out a whole bunch?
Okay, here's the trick.
Control minus that thing.
No. 50 times. Hey, we can try that, I guess.
There you go.
Oh. This is the best music. Come on, man.
How fast was that?
Come on.
86.
Faster. Okay, harder.
Here's the trick. Right click. Right.
Okay. Right click. Right
click, and now go to the other side.
Oh.
And then press right your click. Other button. No, get to the other side of the window.
Right click on what side?
Right click there.
The sexy side.
Right click. Now move your mouse over to the left side.
Mm-hmm.
And left that you're still in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And right then click. Left click. Ah, oh, didn't work.
No, it's not working.
Oh, man.
Sorry, your magic trick. Your cheatery.
It does not work.
It's not working. Spanked.
Spank that monkey. Do it yourself. Spank your own monkey.
Tell us what your records are. Let's move on. Alan, save us.
All right, so I know you guys do a lot of random text editing on occasion, depending.
It's been known to happen.
This is not Emacs.
So, guys at work, we're using this really cool text editor, Sublime Text.
Mm.
And if you just stare at that intro page thing for it, whatnot, it just sort of rolls through all the different things that it can do. It has, like, plugins for all kinds of different programming languages, and it does weird, cool, like, you can select multiple words that are the same or whatnot throughout the document all at the same time, or select multiple spaces, like what's happening right now, and delete them.
What the?
Yeah, it's...
I like that on the right-hand side, it gives you the entire view of the document.
It
does. Not for this particular document, but...
Yeah, it gives you the whole... You can scroll up and down on that side of it as well. You can drag
what
up
is going
down.
On?
Like, yeah, it's... They're typing in the same place or
what?
Different places
you can't
all at
do that?
Time. It's... Yeah, it's...
you
it's
can't
pretty,
type in more than one spot. That's a rule.
It's crazy. Yeah,
oh,
I don't know.
Amazing.
It's good stuff.
Sublime Text.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And there's a beta... The release version is 2, I think, and then there's a beta 3 that you used to have to have it's sort of like try for free and then buy if you want sort of thing. Used to have to like have bought it to use the new beta, which is supposedly even better, but they removed that in the last version, so you can download the beta 3, you know, without any issues.
Gotcha.
Oh, 64-bit.
OS X, Linux, too. Windows, it's everything. So
Mike, it looks like it has such a huge learning curve to use some of these features, though.
Yeah, but once you know that stuff, I mean, look at what
once you know that, they'll change everything or discontinue the application.
I don't know.
I just learned all the Notepad++ crap. I learned how to open up documents and stuff in it. It has color.
Did you learn how to close them yet?
You can still use it like Notepad++. You can still just, you know, sort of move around with arrows and type and whatever if you want. Or you can type in 10 places at the same time if you know whatever the hotkey is.
Okay, all right. I don't use Python. Let's see. Use GoTo, anything, to quickly navigate between files, even the largest projects. Control-P shows GoTo, anything, and typing then filters on file directory names. Amazing.
Yeah. It's good for editing, like, source code projects.
You can do regular expressions in it. I hate this program. Because I hate regular expressions. Send it back.
An irregular expression guy.
Send it back.
I think there's either good built-in support or plug-in support for HTML editing, and it color codes everything for you. It's pretty cool.
Control D is used to select the next occurrence of the word. That's pretty awesome. So you change one variable name, you can change them all. Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, crazy.
Ken's going to go back and be an engineering major now just because of this application.
Ken is just like gaping over there. He's like, what?
All right, that's going to round up the show for us this week. Thanks for everybody for hanging out. If you watch us live, we would love for you to join us if you did not. PCPro.com/live. You can go there Wednesdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. That's when we tend to do our recording. You can see the schedule on the right-hand side of the website, which I'll bring up right here. This right here, this is our schedule. It says we are live. There's also a little link here. It says get notified when we go live. If you click that, it'll give you to take you to the subscription thing where you just put your name and your email and you submit it, and then we will more than likely send you an email before we go live so that you are.
Hey, that YouTube picture,
us.
You kind of had the Bieber thing going.
Right here?
Yeah.
What am I doing?
Look at that. You got the attitude. You've got your shoulders hunched over.
You're spitting on people.
Look larger to the audience.
There are people kind of reaching up and trying to touch me.
Yeah, and you're spitting on them?
Yeah, they're. I have a cool, what do you call that, Countryman mic on, you know? Yeah, here we are, giving away some stuff. Here's NVIDIA flying that copter thing. Yeah. It was a fun time. It was a good time. Here we are. There's Ken. Look, there's Ken. There's Maury. There's Josh. There's Tom. Oh, there's Tom again. Hey, look, there's Alan. Alan, get out of the way.
Yeah, Josh was the bartender.
There's me. Look, people, they want things. Oh, look, I threw a shirt out. God, it was so exciting.
Hey, look, he has a haircut like me.
Bald, you mean?
Well, that too.
What is Tom doing?
I don't know.
Oh, he gave the prize to the girl. He's a sucker.
Yeah.
Go figure. So that was it for this week. Thanks to anybody that came up and said hi during QuakeCon. We really appreciate it. Shook a lot of people's hands that were appreciative of the show. They loved it. They watched us. We had to the people that showed up.
How badly did you lose to the naked guys too?
Didn't actually play them. You weren't supposed to bring that up. Now it's recorded. I did walk through the BYOC probably 4 or 5 times after that, and I walked by the A2M section of the BYOC.
But you kept avoiding the
what
naked
does that stand
guys.
For?
We're not going to get into it. You can Google it if you're really interested, but don't. And like, I kind of like looked around. I didn't know everybody that was in the group, right? And nobody kind of said, "Okay, let's do this." So Tom and I did our normal kind of walk through while we had been drinking and challenged people to different things and try to get them to do stupid stuff to win products. Yeah, we've got all kinds of blackmail on everybody now, so it'll be fun. PCPro.com/podcast is the URL to share if you want to download it, catch the video after the fact. That's where it's all located. So we will be back next week for another exciting episode in the world of computer hardware. Maybe we should rename the show to that, The World of Computer Hardware.
This week in the world of computer hardware perspective for PCs.
Sometimes. Very nice. Computers. I think that'll work too. So thanks everybody for joining us. We'll see you next week. I'm Ryan Schraub.
I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
I'm Josh Walrath. And I'm Alan Montana.
Bye.